This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
What's up, crew? First real one of the year, huh?
Well, it's certainly great to be back back at football.
And we back. And we back. And we back.
Let's do it.
And we back. And we back. And we back.
You know, it's dope because you got people that you kind of came in the game with and you all on the same field at the same time. And I think we can be a really exciting group.
And we back. And we back. And we back.
It's great. You know, first day in pads is always, we had shoulder pads yesterday. Today we had full pads. It's always exciting. You know, guys been waiting all year to really get physical and hit. And that's kind of when you get to really evaluate where you are, especially us up front.
Back. And we back. And we back.
That's exciting. There's a lot of great competition in the receiver room, the great competition at tight ends, running back. So it's a special thing for us to have so many talented.
Back. And we back, and we back.
Just building. I never played with him. And so just out there communicating, explaining what I see in him, and vice versa. And I believe that this group can be outstanding. And so it's day one. We have a long ways to go. Put on the pads here soon and really start building.
And we back, and we back.
Y'all excited?
In the words of Chicano from Chicago, we back and welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast as the 2019 training camp kicks on into second gear. Myself, Stuart Court, as ever, though, to go through all the early headlines and all the headline makers, good and bad, is Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
We're good. I mean, I was just about to say, I mean, slightly disappointing news on the podcast front that we're now entering year four, and as a result I've actually decided to hold out, and so unfortunately for the listeners, you won't get any statistics, knowledge, detail from me, so when you don't get that, just be sure that it's not that I don't have the knowledge, statistics or details, it's that I'm holding out until I get a new contract. So yeah, just want to make that absolutely clear going into the new season that my lack of information and my lack of understanding of anything is strictly deliberate, that I'm holding out all my good information until Stuart re-ups my deal. Yeah. And if he even thinks of picking up my option, we're going to have big problems.
Yeah, so this is like the podcast version of CJ Pro, so I sold that, didn't you?
Harsh, but hey, we'll always have Philadelphia. So yeah, I guess so.
That's all. Right, so obviously training camp 5 or 6 day, I think they've just wrapped up day 5. As we record with an off day tomorrow, I think the main positive news, Adam, is that Bobby Wagner got paid, got his bag, and pretty heftily and pretty healthily was that bag, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be delighted for the guy. It's fantastic to see him do so well out of it. There have been discussion that, you know, at his age, whether or not you want to give someone a massively long deal. So the fact that it's a 3-year contract makes me feel pretty good about it. I would imagine that a lot of it's quite heavily front loaded because there is cap space this year that doesn't look like it's going to be used. So with a bit of luck, it will be front loaded. I mean, has the breakdown been released yet?
I'm literally just trying to, I just Googled it. The only thing I've got is the original NFL.com and Seahawks website stuff. I don't think the breakout, I mean, what was it? It was, what, 3 days ago?
Yeah, so, 3 or 4 days ago, so perhaps not.
Yeah, but no, it's a 3-year, $54 million extension for Seahawks, number 54, with $40.2 million of that in guarantees. And one of the not only have the Seahawks give a third contract to someone who's still under the age of 30, this is the first example of them giving a hefty new contract to someone who was representing himself, Adam.
Yeah, I had an interesting experience with that. I mean, Pete Carroll was talking about how, you know, it was so beautiful the way in which he handled negotiations and whatever.
I love that he used that word.
And, you know, fantastic that Wagner was like the model of model pros in this, because he very easily could have been less professional. But I don't know, it kind of struck me as that was very much a coach sending message to future players, like, if you want money, this is how to do it. And yeah, I wasn't that keen on that phrasing. I thought it was a little bit, I don't know, it was a little bit like ownership, like, we own you and you just do a service for us until we are done with you. And yeah, you can bet your bottom dollar that when 53 or when the roster gets cut down by 27 people or whatever, they're not going to be beautiful in the way in which they let these guys go. So I thought that was a little bit hypocritical. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they were gushing in his praise. And yeah, it's great to see a guy representing himself get so much money, as Richard Sherman was very quick to point out on social media on Friday night.
Yeah, and Russell Okun as well, I think, also did the same when he got his deal in San Diego or Denver, whichever one he's at now. Yeah, but also on that, I do think the way that Bobby Wagner dealt with it compared to what we've seen in the past from the players who played behind him for so many years, and Chancellor and Earl Thomas, is that, yes, he technically held out because he was taking no part in on-field practice, in inverted commas, but he was around the building. He was around, especially in a year where they've got a group of linebackers who need a bit of tutoring. Obviously, the two rookies, and you've got people like Shaquem Griffin as well and Austin Kleacher. His presence, while it wasn't the full shebang with Bobby up until he got paid, the fact that he was around and being a model pro, again, inverted commas, definitely laid in his favour for how the team clearly approached their end of the deal, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he was amazing. And it was good to see kind of the two sides come together and make a deal. But yeah, like he did the team a lot of favors in how great he was in not making it a story, which you know these things often are. And yeah, you got to appreciate kind of how well he treated the whole situation. It was great.
Yeah. So here's a quick clip on what Bobby had to say on his press conference just after day after he signed that deal at VMAC two or three days ago.
It feels great. It feels good to be back out there, to be back out there with my teammates. You know, it was a real learning experience. I got a chance to kind of be a coach for a minute and try to teach the young guys as much as we can. And it's good to be back out there teaching them in person instead of off the field.
Yeah, and something Bobby Wagner picked up on, Pete Garris picked up on, KJ Wright also in his press conference over the last few days has picked up on, is that the group at linebacker, we've got some questions elsewhere, especially on the defensive side of the ball, Adam, which we'll get onto in a bit. But that depth, if Cody Barton and obviously BBK from just down the road from Montlake in Washington can, If he can translate his college game into the pros and Barton continue on this ascendancy through the first week of camp, the depth there is something we've lacked over the last few years and arguably since Pete Carroll's been in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if the snap one on a base defense is going to be KJ Wright, Michael Kendricks and Bobby Wagner, the fact that there's so much depth behind them is really heartwarming, actually. It is a position that, you know, the team's heavily reliant on getting to side from side to side, and you know, they always put a big onus on the linebackers. And you've seen when Bobby Wagner hasn't been quite right how destructive that's been to the team. So the fact that they've been able to build so much depth around it is really positive to see. And now they've got to start working on either side of the linebackers in order to build something for the season.
Yeah, but I mean since 2011, since KJ and Bobby Wagner been in the building, it's kind of been that massive backup quarterback chasm, isn't there? But that doesn't seem, if obviously it is only practice, isn't real live game action, that the guys behind them are chomping a bit and impressing and bridging that chasm somewhat. Also coming out the first couple of days of training camp, with some less positive news in the fact that defensive tackle double figures in sacks last season, entering a pretty big year financially himself. Jarran Reed was suspended by the league for 6 games following an incident, was it 2.5 years ago in Bellevue? The incident was so long ago, I think everyone, probably apart from the victim in the alleged incident, probably forgot about it, but it's, I mean, it's shallow and it's a big blow to the team in what is the grand scheme of things is kind of a minor thing, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's try and separate it into two parts. I mean, as you say, quite rightly, there's a victim here. And so it would be absurd, obnoxious and ignorant of us to start talking about whether it's unfair, like some people have done, because of Tyreek Hill didn't get and he didn't get. You know, if there's a domestic violence issue that's gone on, then quite right, someone's been punished for it. And we hope that the victim is okay, and regardless of what's happened. If you're then looking at it from the team perspective, which, you know, we are doing a CEO podcast, so we're not going to just bury our head and just ignore the fact that it's an issue. Not that we're saying it's as big an issue, but on the issue of the team, I think it's safe to say that, you know, it's really not a position that they were hoping to, or, you know, could afford to lose a lot of depth in, that there already isn't an awful lot going on by way of pass rush. And Reed was a guy that I imagine they were banking on to be a big part of it. So those 6 games, as it happens with the schedule, I'm not convinced that his loss is going to be one that's going to make an enormous difference to the record of those 6 games. But it's still, you know, when you're going to go into somewhere like the Steelers and you need to get around Big Ben up the middle, he's going to be a big loss to that. Mm. And it's going to be interesting to see how they recover the situation.
So obviously another thing with the Jarran Reed thing is the handling, not obviously from the league. It's 26 months ago the incident was, and there was no charges filed, although that seems to be under a bit of a cloud with the news of this suspension. But also, I mean, it is a haphazard way of the wider picture in the league, of almost haphazard and completely inconsistent way they deal with incidents and things, and especially when it comes to domestic violence. Adam,
the whole thing's a complete mess. And to be honest, I think it's pretty arrogant that the league decide that the law may say one thing, but we're going to do our own thing. And actually, I kind of think the league would save themselves an enormous amount of bother if they just said, we're going to go on what the law do, and that's it. So if the law says X, we're X. If the law says Y, we're Y. Because they're almost causing themselves more controversy and more issues by having a law unto themselves, which in this situation, you know, really, the league should now have to present its findings.
Yeah.
Because the law's presented some findings, and well, we know what they presented because they've said not guilty. So really, the league now owe it to us to express what a court would do, because otherwise they're going to be in this position of ambiguity where we get Tyreek Hill who just walks away despite there being seemingly quite a lot of evidence, and Reed, according to the law, who has, you know, done absolutely, well, done nothing wrong by way of the law, he's now punished. So there kind of needs to be a situation where the league either becomes more transparent or more opaque, because they're in the middle of, they're in a real purgatory situation right now whereby they're losing on both counts.
Yeah. I think it has to be something that will be in the next CBA, which seems to be rumbling underground a little bit as the deadline to that edges clearer. That has to be something. They have to take the power out of the hands, because I think every decision comes through and is finalised by Mr. Roger Goodell. And they've had so many opportunities over the last 2, 3, or 4 years, and serve the teams to a lesser, in a less broad way, to just put something in place that they can actually have. Okay, this, if you do this, you're out for this long. I mean, you got people like Josh Gordon, you got people like Martavis Bryant, who are out the league for things which, in the grand scheme of things, while they break laws, it's socially less detrimental to what Jarran Reed is accused of, Tyreek Hill is accused of, Kareem Hunt was accused of. It's just a haphazard way they seem to be dealing with it. surely has been noticed by the players and the NFLPA, and that's, I can imagine, be something which would be somewhere on that agenda when the CBA talks really kick up a gear at them.
Yeah, and also, like, Roger Goodell works for the 32 owners, ultimately.
Yeah.
So he works for the teams and is also being the arbitrator of justice against players in these teams. So it's just haphazard. And it's just messy. And they could make it so easy for themselves by just saying, do you know what? We're stepping away from this stuff.
Yeah.
But in acting, they're doing themselves no favours.
Yeah, it's a league which prides itself on parity and fairness of and like level playing field and stuff. But there's things like this where the playing field is completely slanted, and there is some cynical ways you could look at the suspensions of certain players in comparison to suspensions, as arbitrary as that may be. Also, the handling on the Jarran Reed thing. He's someone who went through the JUCO route. Obviously, me and you have watched examples of that through like QB1 and documentary Netflix, Last Chance U and stuff. You kind of have a feeling for what that means when you go the JUCO route to a certain extent. I think Jarran Reed was not, but the team in general they kind of planted their foot in the ground, and there's people and fans who kind of have this cult like following to the team, but the team aren't completely out of the woods with this, are they? Because I mean, there's a very cynical argument that if Jarran Reed faces suspension when the incident happened, Jarran Reed is probably playing for a different team right now, but because his value has upped in 27 months since the incident, they're in his corner a bit more. Is that fair?
Yeah, look, I think ultimately these teams are always in it for themselves, and it's foolish to suggest otherwise. But, you know, John Schneider with the Frank Clark situation made it very clear what his views were on domestic violence, and that no player kind of convicted of it would be on the team. So it's a bit of a tricky one for them with this. I don't know if Schneider and Carroll have spoken too much about it.
No.
Have they kind of from that point? But again, I think we're probably getting into messy territory here, which isn't really our remit. But I think it's safe to say the whole thing is unsavory for a number of reasons. Most important thing is that we hope the victim of the issue is completely fine now and has some kind of, is at peace with what's happening. But the league have made this more convoluted than it needs to be. And as a result, I think that's the reason that people are still going to be talking about this for a while, when really they could have nipped this in the bud just with a lot more transparency.
Obviously, we said on the on-field stuff, pass rush is now a massive issue, even more so after practice today, where rookie first-round pick RJ Collie went down with what appears to be an ankle sprain, severity unknown. But while it is a dodge bullet, that it is only, it seems to be anyway, because it was the Ian Rappaport reporting that, it seems to be only a sprain. The pass rush issues are just somewhat picking up speed as they roll down the hill, aren't they?
Yeah, I always take the view that these high ankle sprains don't ever fully get solved until you have a full off-season off. Like, you can play with it and you can be fine with it, but it wouldn't stun me if come the end of the season they can say that, you know, Collier was playing through pain with a high ankle sprain, despite the fact that he was back on week 5 or whatever. It seems like the kind of injury that will keep him on the injury report for the whole season. Because Russell Wilson was never really right after his sprain, was he?
He suffered
against the Dolphins. He never really got back to where he was. And even so, he still played in it, but you know, the snap off the ball that Collier is going to need to get is probably more extreme than what Wilson was going to need to do at the time. So, you know, I guess they'll strap it, but it's really not an ideal situation to have another high pick on that defensive side, you know, go down with something this time of the year.
2 years to the days since the news broke about Malik McDowell's incident, and obviously we know everything and the fallout from that. Behind the pass rush, though, a familiar face has returned to the fold at VMAC. Adam, Deshaun Shedd re-signed, seems to be somewhat of a camp body defensive back depth, and he's talked about, I think Greg Bell's tweet today that Shedd says the move kind of helps him because he wants to settle with his family. I think his wife's from the area as well. So, but it's nice to see that number 35 back in Seahawks play. And I know he's someone who you quite enjoy seeing back, and also wanted to see the team keep him a couple of years ago as well.
Yeah, I thought he was. Am I right in saying that I think a couple of years ago we talked about him maybe being one of the best defensive backs on the team that year before he got injured in Atlanta?
Yeah.
And he never was never really able to recover from that injury. And, you know, they were never really going to pay him kind of first or second contract money at the time of year when he went down. But I'm delighted to see him back. I wanted them to keep him. I wanted them to keep Luke Wilson. Maybe that one's wrong. But, yeah, I wanted them to keep all those guys at the time because they felt like good team guys to have around. And when you're looking for an identity, which I think we've lacked a touch in the last couple of years, players like that for me can be great locker room experiences. I think Shedd's been doing some work at safety, if I'm not mistaken, over the last couple of days, which is quite interesting because I don't know, he's always struck me with that kind of like on the lankier, rangier side that a cornerback is going to give you versus a free safety, which is where I think he's been playing.
Yeah.
Makes it more.
They did draft two. They did draft two safeties as well back in April.
So, yeah, maybe it's a position of slight concern for them. But it'd be interesting. And look, if anyone's going to know what Pete Carroll's looking for in a player to make the team, it's going to be Shedd. And he's not in a position of great strength on the team. And if he performs well in camp, maybe something happens with that.
On the other side of the ball, though, everything seems to be sweetness and light somewhat. Pete Carroll talked about over the weekend that Russ getting these contracts sorted so early in the offseason, obviously the deadline while we were living through it was uber annoying. But Pete talking about how clear-minded Russell has been through the summer, through the offseason, and through all the workouts. Obviously, you've seen him down in LA with DK Metcalf and pretty much anyone who can play receiver for the Seahawks this year. It kind of seems to hold some weight that maybe that could be a good thing compared to what maybe Bobby Wagner has gone through over the last 6-7 weeks. So it just seemed when he spoke the other day that was it was just a case of getting to the end zone with that deal. But the clear-mindedness of Russ could be a benefit when he now, with Doug Baldwin obviously not there, is the unchallenged leader of this team on the offensive side, isn't he?
Yeah, Tom Brady is the only quarterback that I'll ever say in the NFL who was on his third plus contract and doing his team a favour. But Wilson taking that deal when he did and getting it sorted and not having a hangover into camp, into the season, has done the team a massive favour by just, you know, all of that noise is gone. And that noise was, you know, if you remember back, you know, March seems a long time ago, but
so
you know, a few podcasts ago, we were talking about, you know, Cowherd talking about him going to the Giants and what the trade would be and how much he would get in a trade. And we can just ignore all of that for pretty much ever now. And we have a quarterback for, you know, the foreseeable, which is just such a relief. Because really, once you've got that, everything else will one way or another fall into place. So having nothing to talk about on that regard is the, even though it would make for good content, I'm just so happy it's dealt with. Because even back in last October when the Seahawks were in town playing the Raiders, we were sat at a pub with Walter Jones, the name drop, and we were talking about Russell Wilson signing a new deal. So it's a conversation that's dominated Seahawk fandom for almost 12 months now, and so to have it out the way is just massive. And you're right, it does help them go into camp with a clarity. It does help them work out in Los Angeles together, knowing that this is going to be the core group for the foreseeable future, and that's just great.
Yeah, and also it does help all that chemistry and everything when you've got a 6'4" behemoth outside. The hype, Adam, is one real, and two, are you buying it?
I don't know. It's tricky because there's nothing about DK Metcalf's past at, you know, college, his college production. It just doesn't suggest that it's going to work in the NFL. Like there's statistics that show that if you only catch as much as he did in college in his last couple of years, like he's not going to be a great NFL player. But then if you just go with what your eyes tell you,
he's been an absolute stud so far, and he seems to be absolutely burning people up. And they had the pads on today, and he was doing it again. So maybe it is real. I just think it's impossible to say until we actually see it in a game.
Yeah, most definitely. But there is one worry that DK14 and the talk of trust for your quarterback kind of bring us back to JK15 and all the enjoyment, again, inverted commas, we had with that partnership. Trust with Russ is needed, but it's not always a fun experience, is it, Adam?
No, but at least this guy's got some kind of bulk and strength to him. Then, you know, you'd hope at least the contested catches would be somewhere that DK's okay, which was not Mr. Curse's finest attribute.
Yeah, but I wasn't blown away by the pick. I think 64 was kind of the back end of the second round was pretty much his ceiling, and kind of where I think I said before, it was acceptable for how little my opinion matters to the team, is where we took someone like him. But because the hype, because he ran fast, you just had to go and watch Ole Miss. He was outperformed by AJ Brown, who I don't think's doing much in Tennessee, but I don't think the league pays any attention to Tennessee in July. And the other guy who I can't remember who was an undrafted free agent, then he's got his mate who's also in Seattle, and Terry Wright was an undrafted free agent, and he kind of outperformed him at times as well. Yeah, but no, the hype, as you say, is going to have to wait till we see him on the field. But he's not doing anything to qualm or quash it, and that, I think there's a couple of red zone, if not a couple of touchdowns, there was some impressive red zone catches, and yeah, that partnership is bubbling nicely. Elsewhere on the offense, Adam, we're, what, as I said, 5 or 6 days into training camp, and the words offensive line have barely been uttered, Adam. It's refreshing, but it's also, that could be a sign of something to get not slightly excited about, that the O-line, touching all the words, is settled as we enter the second week and head into preseason games back in the next week, Adam.
I was completely chilled about it until I saw a tweet today that Ethan Posich was taking reps with the first offensive line. That kind of scared me a little bit, because I'm still a tiny bit scarred from his performances last year at times. You're more of a fan than I am, I think.
I don't mind Posich, but that's literally what made me think, oh yeah, that's the first time we've actually heard of anyone from the O-line do anything. Actually, Phil Haynes sat out Patty, or we need to go back on that PR Twitter and figure out these pronunciations, but he's worryingly in a walking boot walking around the VMAC today. But I literally saw that tweet, I think, from Mike Dugard, and he's like, oh yeah, the offensive line are practicing as well. And obviously then Dwayne Brown spoke after practice as well, and that is a big old human. But it's nice to see, we could probably health permit and pick our five, couldn't we?
Yeah, but we've been waiting a few years to have something like this. It's so nice to, you know, there's nothing worse as a fan that when everyone knows your team has an issue and it's not addressed, and you go into the season and you just watch it, like, it just becomes like such a deflating thing. So when it eventually does get dealt with, it's so great to see. It's almost like an enormous weight is just lifted. Yeah, we've all had it with our football teams when it's, you know, we're missing a centre midfielder for a year, and you waste a year watching them, and then they buy one and it's better and it's so great. And last year they addressed it and it was better and it was so great. And so now we can just enjoy it, and hopefully it'll be the same next year.
So is this year a right back, Adam? Yeah.
We couple of things that need to be done, but yeah, maybe one or two.
Anything else caught your eye of the stuff you've caught drips and drabs off of? Because it's covered, every inch of practice is covered, from Pete Carroll's ice cream van treats and running on a scooter to blitz sneaking up on our pal Mike Dugard yesterday as well. Anything else caught your eye in the coverage?
I didn't see that. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, and it's ridiculous, I can remember his number but not his name, because I'm going to get his name wrong, like Brody Carson, number 57, or who's been getting... It's not Brody Carson at all, is it? I've whiffed on the linebacker's name that everyone's been... The farmer linebacker that's been doing really well.
Cody Barton.
I nearly had it. Brody Carson, Cody Barton, it's nearly the same thing. Everyone, give or take.
They both sound like they're from Utah, so you're fine.
Exactly. He's been getting a load of hype, which is interesting because if you'd said to me 2 weeks ago, does this guy play for the Seahawks or does he work in the local Whataburger, I think I wouldn't have wanted to give you an exact idea because I'm still convinced that we have about 14 players on the roster. And that's about it. You cannot tell me there's 90 people there that are real human beings, but apparently they're off. So, let's see how it's going. I mean, they're getting healthier in the secondary. I think Delano Hill was on the field for the first time today. I'm holding out, so I've not got the knowledge. But, you know, Leno Hill is also Delano Hill, isn't he? Because then all of a sudden it's Leno on social media and it's freaking me out. And I just don't know where we are because it's not like a lot of these guys don't have similar sounding names. So to have a Leno and Delano is freaking me out.
No, it's Leno Hill. But I think this is a case of Hauschka deciding after 6 years to Tiger One that you spell his first name differently. I think that's kind of what it is. I think he's kind of decided now drop DE because Leno Hill kind of sounds, it kind of sounds like you're just, you know, I don't know, some, a part of the Fugees or something. Just a quick update. Brody Carson is a offensive guard and tackle for Valwood Football, which is in Valdosta, Georgia, and he looks like a cross between the son Modern Family and Haley Joel Osment. So maybe keep an eye on that because I'm pretty certain looking at this picture, Valwood Football is a high school team.
I go into year 8 of this podcast and holding out for the second time, we could be flying when he joins.
Yeah, it's weird how quickly I got. You've obviously been watching OL One. Is that maybe it's a new series on Netflix? Also, a lot of Seahawks related coverage, obviously. Some of it also a bit heartbreaking, and probably nothing as heartbreaking as seeing Earl Thomas in purple and white, Adam, on Twitter and on the field lighting up people. But I think I saw you talk to people about appreciating what we've witnessed over the last few years. If you want to touch on that, because it kind of seems that people are kind of, and with our conversation with friends and stuff, that the appreciation just isn't there, and it's kind of going to take a while to really understand the last 7, 8, 9 years of being a Seahawks fan and how pretty damn lucky we've been, Adam.
Yeah, I might be wrong, but like there was such a chip on the shoulder of the team the whole way through. Which is one of the things that made them great. That even when they won the Super Bowl, a lot of the talk was about, we're going to do it next year. And then in that next year, you had the Harbin stuff, and then it was 6-4, and we didn't know what was going to happen, and they made it back. And then you had, obviously, the throw instead of the run at the one-yard line. And to me, now that we're not at that level, in my opinion, I kind of feel like I wish I'd enjoyed it a little bit more, being at the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like I didn't realize I was at the top of the mountain, despite it being patently obvious that I was, because I was always looking at the next game when maybe I should have just tried to enjoy the last game a bit more. And I think going into this season, to be honest, last year I didn't particularly enjoy it. And I felt like I'd gone in with too much agenda and I was too anti certain things. And ultimately, like, life's too short. And I just want to, this year, like, I'm not the hugest fan of the offensive coordinator, and it's going to annoy me when they run on 1st and 10 more often than not. But I kind of want to enjoy it more because I didn't feel like I enjoyed it enough last year, and it's still ultimately fun, and there were still some great moments. But I don't know, like I felt like I was going into so many games pissed off before they started because there was stuff I didn't like, which is dumb. And I didn't get up off my seat when they beat Carolina at the end, which was an amazing play and an amazing win. And I don't know, like, not that anyone's listening, but if anyone is listening, I want it to be like a rallying call that, like, we should, and many people do. So I'm not calling out anyone out, because in general, people are hugely positive, especially on the Facebook group, which is great to see. And I think maybe it's just time that we got to enjoy this year, because we're in the prime of a quarterback's career. And as a result, you always have a chance. And, you know, fast forward to October, if we're 3-6 and I'm want to punch myself in the face, but I don't know. I think we can enjoy this more. There was a thread on Facebook today, which in theory I didn't disagree with that much at all, but it was saying, you know, I'm looking at the team and is anyone else massively worried? And
in a way, like, I am worried because I don't think we have enough pass rush. I don't think we have enough of a secondary. But I also don't think we're going to win the Super Bowl. So ultimately, there's not that much to worry about, because it's not like 2 years ago or 3 years ago when I thought we're going to win the Super Bowl and we weren't good enough. That's something to worry about. Right now, I kind of feel like we know what we are. And even if our season ends on Wild Card Sunday again, because we get beaten by a better team, for me, that would be an incredible season. Yeah. And so as a result, I want to try and enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think the thing I wanted to kind of write somewhere, but I couldn't, one, find anywhere to write about it on, and also couldn't really find a way to figure it out. It's like, as you said, with football, like, when I'm a Coventry City fan, there's a team now currently in the third tier, if anyone doesn't know, but when they got relegated in 2001, obviously I was a youth back then, I was in school, and it was just a given that that team, the team we had with people like Dion Dublé, Robbie Keane, Gary McAllister, all the Moroccans and World Cup competitors we had in that team, that it was a given that it would all return. And 18 years later, you kind of, every day, if you follow me on Twitter, there's always a video from some grainy footage from 1997. And it's kind of like, you kind of pine for that time. And that's kind of, think, this is kind of how I think we're going to look back at that team, at the Legion of Boom, at watching Marshall and Lynch, probably even watching Doug Baldwin, even people can't really see it, watching some of the plays that Jimmy Graham made as well. You think the Buffalo game that me and you were at a few years ago, we're looking back in a few years at those players and the players that play for that team, when this team, if it ever happens, is again in the doldrums of the league for even just a year or two, you kind of gonna, I think it's only then that people will realise and think, oh, holy fuck, that was fun. But now, while we're kind of in the midst of it and we kind of have the most positive coach in all of sport, arguably, his positivity kind of bleeds through somewhat, and it's kind of it works, and that people can't, are less easy to move to the negative side of it as we were last year. So it's kind of like last week, it was kind of like, I saw a tweet or I saw a post where the training camp was starting. I was like, oh, here we go again then. It was kind of like it hadn't been a thing. So as you say, it's kind of something where you kind of just kind of sit back and just see what happens and enjoy the stories, like DK Metcalf and Brody Carson and the people that are coming through. We can get to enjoy.
I'm pretty sure Cody Barton, Stu, just so you know.
Those new players, those new stories, and those new people who are going to be the everywhere in the jerseys, like Doug Baldwin was in 2013, or like Richard Sherman was in 2012, and kind of, we might get to do it again, but the chances are we're not going to get to do it again at the level that we've seen over the last few years. And it's kind of, as you say, it's something to enjoy this time around, and I appreciate it a bit more, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I wasted Doug Baldwin's last season of his career. I didn't get to enjoy his, like, great plays that I'm now going to miss desperately. Yeah. Look, this is not going to be like a biased, it's going to be biased, but it's not going to be a bells and whistles and fanfare podcast whereby everything that we do is great, like some pathetic UK groups are, whether we, of other teams, which you only need to scroll social media and you can see some people that, like, you know, I saw one, like a Giants group saying, now they've got rid of the diva Odell and they've got two injuries in wide receiver. It's a great opportunity for some of the young guys to step up. No, you are fucked beyond belief. That is the be all and end all. You are fucked.
Yeah, we're not going to
be like that. But I think we should try and put a positive spin on stuff where possible, because at least they're, you know, there's a philosophy that they're working towards, yeah, and they're going to live and die by that. And at least we know what we're in for.
Yeah. If this team, as you say, if this team has a one and done playoff run against a Philadelphia, kind of say, it would be
Carroll should win more coach of the year if we make the playoffs.
Yeah, he won't. But also, not just that, John Schneider should be winning awards as well, because the work he did. I mean, was it 4 days before the draft? We had like two of the three draft days off, mm-hmm, basically. And then we've turned up with people like Cody Barton and all the rest of it who could and seem
sure
to be here in the
Carson,
this is a 2019 Mr. Mago, so once he gets cut on cut down day, it would just be something to enjoy a bit more. And I think the stories in this team, obviously DK Metcalf falling as far as he did, you got some absolute people, no one, unless you really sinked into the draft process, didn't know the two Utah players really a lot. Obviously, we got some small route running extraordinaire out of Hawaii. I mean, has there ever been a Hawaiian product in the NFL? So, yeah, there's some fun stories. Obviously, also the fact that this team, if this team can win when the QB contract and obviously the linebacker contract is such a large part of it for the next 3 or 4 years, it would make everything a bit more enjoyable and something, again, to look back on in a few years and kind of... I mean, look at the Giants. I mean, the Giants won 2 Super Bowls, but that is a miserable fan base.
Yeah. Imagine being that.
Yeah. I mean, Daniel Jones is their great hope, and he looks the same in every facet of you could think of as the quarterback who has kind of bored them to sleep for the last 4 or 5 years. But on the 2019 Hawks, is that kind of where your thoughts and feelings are? That kind of this team, if it makes the playoffs, it's an achievement. If they, but they're probably going to be there or thereabouts. But the NFC, again, as it has for the last few years, seems pretty loaded, doesn't it? Is that kind of where your feelings are as we move into game, in the loose sense of the word, next week?
Yeah, I think we'd do unbelievably well to win in this NFC with the amount of talent that's on show. I think a wild card is probably the best we can hope for, a wild card spot. And as I say, that'll be an incredible achievement. Yeah, that would be absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, any other NFL stuff? Obviously, there's a lot of hype coming out of Santa Clara and the middle of Ohio, Adam. San Francisco and the Browns. For me, one of them is more likely to be in the shakeup come Christmas than the other, Adam.
Yeah, the Niners are getting a lot of talk. I mean, in fairness, they do have a loaded defense. Yeah. They should be very, very good. But Jimmy G's played 8 games in his career. And so whilst it's quite likely that he will be good, it's difficult to ascertain exactly whether he is. So I think that hype might be a tiny bit much. And with the Browns, I guess it's can Freddie Kitchens manage an enormous group of egos like the Browns in his first job? I think that's going to be the kicker for him. But I think it should be a fun season. I think a lot of the stuff around the NFL is putrid at the minute. And I haven't even got space for it in the bin, but stuff like Jalen Ramsey's entrance to training camp.
I disagree. The wrestling fan of me absolutely loved that. And was it the punters in Kansas turning up? Antonio Brown turning up in a hot air balloon, then being put on the not.
I love that.
Not in
I love stuff
NFL
like
list.
That. No. The hot air balloon is brilliant. I love the training camp crazy stuff, but the hype man with Jalen Ramsey with the fake money in the bags. I think Dan Hansus put it really well when he tweeted out something like, "When you think a bit in your head is going to go really well for a podcast, and then it absolutely bombs when you actually record it." A bit like my holdout stuff at the start of the episode.
Yeah, people have got 92 episodes of that to just listen to back and prime examples of that. One other thing, obviously, Julio Jones wants a new contract from the Atlanta Falcons, and I don't think the team announced that he won't be playing in any preseason games. That could be the future. That's kind of the NFL equivalent of Christian McCaffrey skipping a bowl game, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's no reason for you that you should play in preseason games. No. There's nothing you can really say that would suggest it would be a sensible decision to put guys that you're paying $20 million for a year out there against guys who must tackle you hard in order to make the team. Like it doesn't equate. So absolutely. And I wouldn't have Russell Wilson playing a snap in preseason.
No, I wouldn't have Russell, Bobby Wagner, probably wouldn't have Tyler Lockett. I think I'd only have Dwayne Brown and Britt play like a series just to get...
Well, if I don't need to protect Russell Wilson, I wouldn't have Dwayne Brown out there, to be honest. I'd have Brown, Britt, and Russell as a triangle that kind of all play together, to be honest, and ideally not play.
Yeah.
I just don't really see what they're going to gain from doing it.
Yeah. All right, moving on a quick spin in the bin, shall we?
Yes.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
And Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, training camp is a week old, as we keep saying. The Hall of Fame game, I think, is on Thursday or Friday night, maybe Saturday. And Hall of Fame game is in the next few days. I have no idea who's playing in it. Brody Carson is going to win the MVP of the Hall of Fame game. So get in the bin for you, Adam.
It's a place that I normally dip into for my bins, and it's social media again. When you see a tweet of one clip or one play of someone like Daniel Jones diagnosing a play and just throwing the ball miles out of bounds, and the tweet is something like, "Yo, Giants, this is the guy that you put a sixth round pick on." I'm not sure if you've noticed, but every quarterback makes a lot of shite looking plays. And if you can remember Wilson against Arizona, for example, can you imagine what would happen if that was kind of a young rookie quarterback that did that in training camp before that? Like, quarterbacks throw the ball away all the time, and often it's the right thing to do. And actually, I'm pleased that some players jumped on to defend Daniel Jones, because I'm not saying that he's going to be good, but it's just such a retweet hunting thing to do stuff like that, and it's just so boring. Maybe that's the 12th time in a row he's done that because he can't see an open receiver. But to just isolate one play like that, when, to be honest, if you throw the ball out of bounds, you can't concede a pick six. It's not a turnover. You've not got sacked. It's not a drive killer. Like, throw the ball away every time if you can't throw it to someone else. I have no problem with it. So if we can just chill out a bit on the socials with stuff like that, that'd be really handy.
Yeah, also, I think one thing you mentioned social media kind of made me think is that people, with every team I've seen, even with the Giants, I think, already, with some of their lesser players, is second-guessing draft picks from a team of players who were picked this year. All we've seen of them is one day in full pads, and we're saying, oh, we could have had that tight end from Hofstra instead of having this linebacker or having this defensive tackle who has broke his thumb or something. It's just like, you can't second-guess when it's not even fucking August. You can't second guess. You shouldn't really second guess anyway, because you're not paid. You haven't put the work in to make that decision and have any inkling on what the thinking was behind any certain pick. But to do it before a preseason game has even been played, for as meaningless as preseason games are, it's just so tiring. And it's just every year, I think, from every fan base. But it's just a couple of notes this week, and it really annoyed me. Also, another thing is, if anyone's seen Last Chance U, this isn't much of a spoiler, I want to put Jason Brown in the bin. He is the worst of the worst. He's probably going to somehow try and vanity search his name. I don't know how you do that for audio, but he's probably going to do that, because it seems what he spent most of his time doing. He's just... For as good as the grades may have improved, that man is the absolute pits of people who have ever been in the public eye in that kind of role. Adam, he's just the absolute ultimate worst. The way he treated some of those players, the wide receiver, can't think. Obviously, Bobby Bruce, he kind of just ignored and just kind of moved on when the kid was clearly, for a couple of weeks, in need of just someone to listen to him, kind of thing. It was kind of unsettling, if maybe that's a bit too heavy
a
word to watch.
Horrible,
that
horrible, horrible season to watch.
Yeah, it was not enjoyable, bar Kalon Davis and the the family of the defensive coordinator is pretty cool, but Jason Brown is just the absolute pits. If you haven't watched seasons 3 and seasons 4 of Last Chance U, please do watch and see if you agree with us, because the next school, if they do another school, can only improve on that supposed human being. I'll swear that, Adam, anyone you want to put praise on in the NFL or sporting world?
Praise on. Well, no, I think it's a really interesting point about you talking about the Last Chance U. I was talking with Jessamine, our friend, friend of the show, Jessamine, about it on social media. And just, yeah, like, I don't know who's watched it and who's not watched it, but I really do urge you to watch it, because it's just, it's so illuminating on the life of these kids who are trying to get into the league. And I think we're all fairly keen to talk about, you know, or criticize players when they hold out, because all they're after is the money. I've been guilty of it myself. But when you look at what some of these kids put their bodies through in order to make it, and the injuries that they hide in order to make it, it's terrifying. And it's heartbreaking to watch. There's a receiver called Marquise King in there who is a quality player, obviously. But the amount of injuries he gets and the amount of injuries that he hides from his coaches in order to get on the field, to get recruited, to maybe play in college, to maybe play in the NFL, to maybe be able to help his mum. It's honestly heartbreaking. And I really urge anyone that's even considers themselves a half or having a passing interest in the NFL to watch it, because it's just a fascinating insight into what goes on behind the glitz and glamour of American football.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're kids a long way from home, a long way out of their comfort zone, as you say, trying to chase a dream, which is still 6 or 7 hurdles to get past to even attain that dream. And obviously, as we know, NFL is not for long, but just that factor calling themselves the NFL player can make them push themselves too far, especially when you come down with Marquise. I think he hides a few pretty severe injuries as well for that series. I think I'd probably agree with that. I think just anyone who gets out of there and kind of, I think Walter Jones went through JUCO. We have to talk to him next time we talk. I think he went through JUCO. So There's for every Walter Jones, there is other side of it as well. But yeah, I think I'd agree with you. Just if you can, try and watch Last Chance U on Netflix. There was someone else I was going to heap praise on. Baker Mayfield is someone I think I was going to put, because he openly said a couple of weeks ago that he watches what Colin Cowherd says just to bite back. I mean, I know the quarterback should be spending his time more wisely, but the fact that 30 hours later on his show, Colin Cowherd had clearly read Mina Kimes' brilliant cover story for the ESPN magazine on Baker and just found the stupidest reason to have a slight dig, because it was brilliant, because he called his shot kind of like in the opposite way Matt Hasselbeck did back in Green Bay all those years ago. And Baker Mayfield is, I mean, if the Cleveland Browns ever do make the Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield at quarterback, Phil Collins has to be involved in the halftime show, doesn't he? But yeah, it's brilliant.
It's just, if they can do it, it would just be such a brilliant story.
Yeah. So obviously we will be back more regularly through the next few weeks. We are trying to book a few guests. Unfortunately, as you see on Facebook, Tony Ventrella had to postpone his appearance on this podcast. We're looking forward to having on, but other things, or the far more important things, cropped up. So we hope to have Tony on at some point through the season, a few other people as well. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can on the Facebook page, The Pedestrian Podcast. You can listen to old episodes, old interviews. We had a pretty in-depth one last time out with Mike Dugar from The Athletic, who wrote a pretty impressive and comprehensive piece and got as much detail as anyone has on the Malik McDowell situation a few weeks ago. So if you want to go and dig that up, that was pretty as he said in a text that he'd been working on that for a while, and boy could you tell. On socials, it's at Seahawks UK. Facebook is UK Seattle Seahawks Fans. Myself and Adam is at @Stu_Corton, at Adam D. Nathan, also on Instagram at UK Seahawkers. But yeah, until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks!
see you out there sometimes doing some punt returns. Is that something you've done before in the past?
This is going to be my first time doing it. Pray for me.
Like it?
Oh, yeah. I like it, baby.